Well, a little bit of a bummer having Riley today because we're talking about the end of the K-State men's basketball season and the women's season as well. And it's also a bummer because I've seen Riley's bracket, but I'm going to ask him anyway. Riley Gates, how is your bracket doing?
It could be a lot better.
You could have stopped with,
you know, when you start, like, if you look at two regions of mine, if you look at the Midwest and you look at the, there's the East, South, Midwest, and the West.
Yeah.
If you look at the West and the Midwest, I'm great. Everything's awesome.
Sure.
If you look at the other two, it's a disaster. I rolled the dice on Villanova to go to the title game. They lost in the second round, so that's not great.
Yeah.
Well, I lost a bunch of Sweet 16s. I only got 11 of them right. This is just—it's not great. This is really bad.
It's one of my worst ones that I've ever had in regards to game to game. But I usually lose a Final Four team early, and I have all my Final Four teams left. But when you consider that 14 of the top 16 seeds in this tournament advanced to the Sweet 16, if you would have been mostly chalky, you'd be in pretty good shape in regards to what's left.
Well, that's what makes me so mad about it, you know. It's like so many people out there, they just, like, you know, they just pick the higher seeds and, like, hey, more power to them. If that's what they want to do with their bracket, that's what they do. But it's going to pay off for them to just take the higher seeds. Look, if you still have, like, Elite Eights and Final Fours, you're still in decent shape. So, like, I feel kind of confident. But losing one of my Final Fours does not help.
Well, and I don't know if I talked to you about it, but I told Dusty about it because we were seeing some people picking Villanova in our contest. And I said, you know what? I've seen Villanova play three or four times this year. I'm not sold on Villanova at all. And I had them in the Sweet 16, and that's as far as I had them going. I was really, really sold on Tennessee, and I felt really good about that when they're up 25. Next thing I know, it's going overtime. I'm like, oh man, now I'm going to look stupid. And so, you know, it's kind of been up and down. You know how it is, Riley. Like, there's some that you get right, and there's some you get wrong. You know, Villanova, you gambled, it didn't work. You know, I had that one picked right, but then you said last week that you thought Kansas would run into a buzzsaw in Auburn. I was sitting there thinking, listen, Auburn got hot. They're coming into the tournament, but they caught some breaks in the SEC tournament. They live and die by the three. So I didn't like Auburn going deep into this tournament. In fact, I had them losing first round. I was dead wrong on that one. LSU's a team I thought that is talented but will lose early. They're in the Sweet 16. So, you know, we each one of us, whether it be you, me, Dusty, or others, probably kind of like you said, we've got a portion of this bracket, we nailed it. And that's what we want to focus on because in other areas, it absolutely imploded on us.
Yeah, definitely, and that's what will come back to bite you. Luckily, what didn't implode on me was the fact that I did not take K-State past this first weekend, and clearly that did not come back to bite me very hard.
It didn't. However, you did say on our show that you didn't think they'd have any problem with UC Irvine, which immediately everybody around here went to Vegas and bet on UC Irvine to win that game. So let's talk about that.
You're welcome.
Yes. If you're wise enough to figure this out throughout the year, you benefited from it. If you actually took Riley's advice to be true, well, then he here's his phone number. Call me afterwards, and I'll get it to you. Yeah, it's a disappointing game, obviously, for K-State. And let's go back. The biggest criticism I have seen, and I wondered about it as I was watching the game, and I've been on the sideline to coach a little bit, nothing at this level whatsoever. And every coach has philosophies. And some coaches are stubborn in regards to, we play man-to-man, we're not playing zone, we're not pressing, or we press and we're not going to play a zone, or this is the way we play, we're not going to go four guards no matter what, and they don't adjust. And then there's some coaches that do adjust, it works out great. Some coaches roll the dice more often than others. They'll play guys with two or three fouls in the first half. There's others, no matter what the situation is, I'm not putting them back out there to pick up a third foul. There's other coaches going, it depends on the situation. If I'm in the lead, I'm going to milk it as long as I can. If I'm behind, I probably got to roll the dice. What were your thoughts on Bruce Weber having Barry Brown on the bench for the final 14 minutes of the first half against UC Irvine? A couple of early fouls. Thought the officiating myself was a little tic-tacky on both sides. But what were your thoughts on Bruce Weber having Barry on the bench the final 14 minutes of the first half?
Well, I was all in Bruce Weber's favor for about 12 or 11 of those 14 minutes. You know, everything he said in the post game, you know, hey, we were winning at the time. The plan was going to be if we're winning,
yeah,
why put him in the game? And I'm all for that. You know, hey, if you can go to the halftime up by 6 or 7 points and you didn't play Barry Brown but 4 minutes, things are going to be great because then he's got 3 fouls to play with. He can be aggressive. I get it. That was also when you were up by 10 points and you're feeling really good about yourself and shots are falling and your defense is good. And then things start to collapse. You know, they put in Sean Neal Williams, who I love him, but he was out of control and he was throwing the ball away and taking ill-advised shots. And same with Mike McGurl, who missed 3 three-pointers in a stretch where K-State missed its last, like, 11 field goals or something like that. It was a disaster down the stretch. It was all in hand until about 4 or 5 minutes left in the first half. That's when things started to get a little bit sketchy, and that's when he should have said, you know what, if I don't put him in, we're going to either be down at half or we're going to have lost the momentum. I got to get him in, stabilize this team, and trust him to play smart defense and not foul and not pick up that third foul. That's where I think he lost the game, because then, you know, UC Irvine hits a shot at the buzzer. It's tied at 30 at halftime. The momentum is clearly with them, and Barry Brown still sat on the bench that whole time. He's cold. He's not in the flow of the game. I mean, we talked about it all football season with Skylar Thompson and Alex Dillon. You know, how can one get consistent? How can one get hot when they're constantly going in and out of the game? Well, it's the same thing with Barry here. You know, how can he get in the flow of the game? How can he hit shots, play defense, things like that, when he's not on the floor that much? And that, to me, is the really upsetting part, was that Bruce Weber stuck to his guns way too hard, and he should have put him in with a few minutes left just to, like I said, stabilize that lead. And I think that they might have won the game. I think Barry would have gotten into the flow of it. But I think the most frustrating part is that, and what doesn't make sense to me, even, you know, outcome completely ignored. Don't bring in the fact that they lost or that they won, whatever. If you're a coach and you've got your senior on the bench, one of the best players in program history, he's going to go into the rafters, things like that, and this could potentially be his last game, do you really want him sitting on the bench this whole time worrying about foul issues? I mean, to me, that's just a really sad way for his career to end. It's not like his fouls are going to carry over into the second round or anything like that. Get him on the floor. If he fouls out, he fouls out, and that's the way he goes. But don't leave him on the bench to go down not swinging, for lack of a better term, and allow him to play. You know, he finished with 2 fouls, and that's just really sad to me. And for everything right that Bruce Irvine did this year, that makes you really upset, because, you know, if someone's got to take the blame on the loss, I feel like it's got to be him here.
Yeah, you know, I understand all that, and I get it. I do. And I was talking about this yesterday on the show. I think you're darned if you do and you're darned if you don't, because based on what you said, I'm with you. I think you trust your senior. I think you have to find a way to get him in, even if you can get him in for an offensive possession. And if you get, and sometimes it doesn't work that way. Sometimes you don't get the dead ball, the whistle, the stop, and then your guy, you miss a shot, you put him on an offense, and then you don't have a stoppage of play for 3 minutes. So you're taking a gamble when you put in a guy, whether it's a senior or not. And the officiating seemed to be pretty, I don't know, it was kind of tight on both sides, I thought, there for a while. So, you know, if Barry gets bumped from somebody or his own teammate into somebody else who's driving to the hoop, he picks up a cheap third. And I think we all get caught up in this, and I'm not just pointing this out to you, Riley, but I'm guilty of it as well. We base our hypothesis on what we think would have happened, but we have no idea. You know, if Bruce Weber puts in Barry Brown and K-State's up, you know, 4 or 5 points, and they put him in when we think he probably should have put him in, and Barry Brown picks up a third foul within 45 seconds, you know, instead of blaming Barry Brown, who maybe should have been smarter, not picked up a third, or maybe it was an accidental little contact and it was a tic-tacky foul, and then we blame the officials, you know, we're going to probably rip Bruce Weber. Well, Bruce, you had a little bit of a lead. Couldn't you have milked it a little bit longer to make sure he didn't pick up his third to the second half? And that's why these guys get paid the money they get paid, because they're supposed to get those things right. And sometimes, whether they do or they don't, or even if they make the right decision, they feel strongly it's the right decision, it just doesn't work out that way.
Well, and that's why I'm not as, you know, I'm not, yes, I think Bruce should have put him back in, but I'm not sitting here on Tuesday going, you know, oh, it's all his fault. Oh, he screwed it up, this and that.
Yeah.
Because I do agree a lot with the damned if you do, damned if you don't argument, because I do see that side of it. And to me, I think I would have just rather seen, you know, hey, we lost. Barry fouled out in the loss, and we lost, but he allowed him to do everything he could.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, they were blowing the whistle hard that day. And now we're looking back at his career saying, man, like, for everything he did, and in 5 years, we're still going to look back and say, oh, man, he had a great career. He's an all-time steals leader, somewhere in point, all this stuff. But we're always going to look at Barry Brown and say, like, man, if he had just played in those few minutes, maybe K-State would have moved on. Maybe K-State would have been in the Sweet 16. Maybe K-State could have gotten back to the Elite Eight. I mean, it's one of those you never know. And exactly like you said, they could have still lost. I mean, UC Irvine played a great game, and it's not like Barry Brown came in and lit it up in the second half or anything like that. But I think, like I said, I think I just would have rather seen him go down, given it everything he had, rather than only playing, 26, 27 minutes in the final game of his career.
One of the things I point out yesterday, I'll see if you agree with this, is I use the analogy of baseball, that the closer comes in the ninth inning and he can close it down, he gets credit for a save. But honestly, closers should be used in different situations than they are in baseball right now. You should take your best reliever or your next best reliever, if you've got a guy that you're just locked in to be your closer and that's your philosophy. And a lot of times baseball games are not won and lost in the ninth inning. They're won and lost in the sixth inning, the seventh inning, and in the playoffs, sometimes it could be the bottom of the fourth inning. And you see now managers starting to figure this out. Okay, there's a bases loaded jam, and this is where the game, we could lose it right here in the fourth, fifth, sixth inning. I'm bringing in my eighth inning guy to get out of this fifth inning jam because it's a high leverage situation. And the analogy I'm making here to compare to K-State and any other basketball institution is that you get into this thinking that I can't afford Barry Brown to have a third foul. I need him to be clear of three as we go in the second half. And that works when you're up 10. But there's also got to be a feel for the game. And sometimes a game can be lost before we even get to the second half. And I'm not saying that's where K-State lost the game. But if that last three-point shot doesn't go in before halftime, this is just my hypothetical situation, I believe K-State wins the game. And Barry Brown's out there defensively. You should be better defensively to where maybe that doesn't happen. And so you use your best players in high-leverage situations. That doesn't mean they have to play the whole last 14 minutes with two fouls. I'll give you another example. Central Florida, I'm sure you watch Central Florida Duke. Taco Fall at 7'6" got his second foul with 11 minutes to go in the first half. Did he sit the whole first half? No. At the 7-minute or 8-minute mark, they brought him back in. He played another 4 or 5 minutes. They needed him on the floor, so the game didn't get away. And then he sat the final 4 minutes of the first half. He stayed involved. He was smart, stayed away from a third foul, and Central Florida stayed in the game. Those are the types of things that I think sometimes coaches, they try to think that way, but they're so used to doing it one way that maybe they just aren't there yet. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. No, I think that it does make a lot of sense. And unfortunately, Bruce Weber's way of going about it is that he's very, and I mean this in a nice way, although it's not going to come off as nice, he's very bullheaded in what he does. I mean, there's no strategic, you just kind of mentioned how UCF peppered in Taco Fall. Well, there's no strategy to the way Bruce Weber does it. It's two fouls, boom, you're done. I mean, there's no consideration of maybe go in for 2 minutes there, maybe coming back out. And the weirdest part of it was he did that with Mike McGurl, with Cartier Jada in the first half, which doesn't make any sense to me because if you're gonna have that strategy, which like I just said, he doesn't do that, but he rolls the dice. He does it with Cartier Jada.
Yeah.
That just didn't make any sense to me. And if you're gonna do something like that, do it with Barry. Don't do it with Cartier, who was just having a very poor game. Everybody was having a poor game. It's not like Barry or Cartier were the only two. But I would have liked to seen him, if he was going to experiment like that, try doing it with Barry. Don't do it with Cartier.
I'm with you. Riley Gates, Wildcat Insider, brought to you by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit and Heineken Electric Residential and Commercial Electric Service Company. He's our guest every Tuesday. Breakdown K-State Athletics with Go Power Cat. Does a wonderful job. And now they've got a little bit more free time on their hands with the K-State men and women being knocked out of the tournament on the same day. We were talking about Barry Brown. And this is what makes sports so tough. When you follow your team and it ends in disappointment, and certainly Kansas fans have felt this many years when they're expected to make it and then they get upset. Certainly we've seen, even it happens to Duke. Duke lost to Lehigh 1 year, a 2 versus a 15. Tom Izzo, Michigan State, as a 2, lost to a 15 a few years back. We saw Virginia lose to a 16 seed. And we talk about the cruelty of sports. You mentioned Barry Brown, you know, not having the best game, and that's what we remember him for at the end, you know, the freshest memory. You know, I think of Kansas a couple years ago. Devontae Graham went 0 for 10 in a regional final loss. Wofford against Kentucky, Fletcher McGee is one of the best three-point shooters in the history of college basketball. He went 0 for 12 from three against Kentucky, and they still almost beat Kentucky. And you just, and then the cruelty, of course, is Central Florida. The guy, it looks like he's got, they've got two shots that are going to go in, and they don't. And Duke hangs on and wins. It's the difference between winning and losing in the second round. It's a cruel, cruel thing. The other cruel thing is injuries. We saw it with Udoka Azubuike for Kansas. We saw it certainly with Dean Wade with Kansas State. We know that K-State was banged up with Jada missing some time as well, and Jada probably wasn't where he needed to be for the NCAA tournament because of that injury. It's just it's the beauty of the beast, or shall I say the ugliness of the beast, when you get into one-and-done situations, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Man, it's really unfortunate that with Dean, you know, you mentioned it there. And that's the other part of this is who knows what – the hypothetical, who knows what happens if Dean plays there. And for everything that I said about Barry going on a sour note, I mean, Dean Wade did not get to play – in an NCAA tournament game except for one time in Dayton, one time here and there in Sacramento, and then 8 minutes against Kentucky in a game where he was essentially a decoy. I mean, that's his postseason memory, and that's really sad for him because I think he was a player that obviously meant a lot to K-State, obviously was a huge impact, and then when it came down to the most important times, he wasn't allowed to be on the floor, and that's just really unfortunate, and it's something that I think Dean Wade deserved a better ending, but like he said in the locker room, man, life's not fair, you know, it's kind of what you have to go through, and, you know, Duke and UCF yesterday, well, it's everybody talks about that tip-in, and yeah, it really was, it was unfortunate, because UCF is literally inches away from going on, and then you think back to last year, Kansas and Duke, and where Grayson Allen's shot literally rimmed out, where it doesn't do that. He does not miss shots like that. It's just this tournament is so back and forth, a razor thin margin of error that you can afford, and it's really unfortunate for, you know, 63 teams or 67 teams really, because only one team at the end of the day gets to be happy at the end of it.
I threw this out there the other day, and see what you think here, because this is how we work mentally in this country for the most part, is we quickly forget what happened before. And what I mean by that is, you know, when Kansas State, back in, what was it, 13, they won a share of the Big 12 title, and they lost to LaSalle, it was like everything was erased because you lost to a 13 seed in Kansas City. Everything's erased. And we talked about it. It's happened with other teams, you know, losing early. Kansas, Duke, Kentucky's even lost early. Carolina's lost early before. It's happened to everybody. But if you would just flip-flop the seasons, Riley, if you just flip-flop them, and K-State last year loses against a 13 first round, but this year they make it to Elite Eight, and it's Barry Brown has a disappointing performance in the Elite Eight, and it's his senior year, and Dean Wade only plays 8 minutes in the tournament this year. Isn't it just a whole different spin on the whole situation, on how we remember things?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's all about what you do in March, right? I mean, it's all about how far you go and what round you reach. And I think that that's what's really tough about this year is that, hey, you won the Big 12. You helped end the streak. You did all this, and Barry Brown was great. And there's so much positive. And then in the matter of 40 minutes, it was all over. That's pretty unfortunate. And you try, you know, as a K-State person, you sit here and you try to point out all the positives that came from this year. And as a fan, you want to talk about the good. And, you know, I wrote a top 10 moments from this year, and every single one of them was great and something that shouldn't be forgotten. But unfortunately, it's like I just said, it's all about the tournament. It's all about March. And you could have the greatest of seasons. You could go undefeated. But if you lose in the Sweet 16 or the second round or whatever, that's really all you're going to be remembered for. They're going to have a trophy, but at the end of the day, this is going to be a team that was a four seed, and even though had to battle some injuries, had to battle some adversity, things like that, they did lose to a 13 seed that they are better than. and that's what they have to live with. I mean, it's a really tough way to go out, but they're not the first team to lose to a low-seeded team. They're not going to be the last one. They're not the first team that's going to have a very disappointing exit after a promising year. It's just kind of the way that this tournament falls.
It is. It is cruel at times, no doubt. All right, the future for the three seniors, Kamau Stokes, Barry Brown, Dean Wade, what do you forecast for them?
I think Kamau could go have a successful career overseas if that's the route he wants to do.
Agree.
I assume he'll play, but I just really haven't looked at him that much, really haven't talked to him much about it. I think Barry Brown will get, an invite somewhere, training camps, G League, thing like that, and an opportunity to make a roster, but will probably come up short exactly like Jacob Pullen, probably, honestly. Unless someone really likes him for his defensive play, and he is a little bit taller than Jake was, so that could come to help him out a little bit. And Dean, I mean, what it's going to be with Dean is somebody taking a chance, someone wanting to roll the dice. He's got the potential, he's got the body, he's got everything you want out of an NBA player, except he doesn't have two healthy feet, which on big men is a killer.
Yes,
I really think he went from a top. I think he was somewhere in the picks of like 14 to 25-ish, probably, if he had played healthy and up to his potential this year. And now I don't even know if he's going to get drafted because of his feet. So that's really tough. And his mental approach to the game, you got to be kind of cocky in the NBA. You got to be pretty confident. And I don't know if he has that in him. So we'll see. He's probably got the best chance to make an NBA roster. But I would probably predict early that on opening day of the NBA season next year, none of these three are on NBA rosters, but maybe a couple of them are close.
I want to see if you agree with this statement. I threw it out there earlier today. It might sound crazy to some, but I said that you have to assume Dean Wade is 100% healthy. So let's say the NBA, they do all their checkups and Dean Wade's fully healed. He's 100% healthy. All right. Who would you draft if you had to choose between these two people, Dedrick Lawson or Dean Wade? And it might depend on your team situation. If you need somebody quickly to fill a little bit of role, it might be Dedrick. But for me, I choose Dean Wade in regards to the upside and ceiling that I think he could provide in the NBA, because he can play above the rim, whereas Dedrick Lawson doesn't. But Dedrick Lawson's a perfect old man type of basketball player, so maybe his game will translate in the NBA. But I kind of lean towards, if they're both perfectly healthy, long-term upside, I would lean towards Dean Wade. Am I crazy?
No, I don't think you are. If he's healthy, if he's good to go, I think Dean Wade has a higher upside and better potential in the league. I think Dean's a better shooter from all areas of the floor, and I think that would obviously help a lot to have a guy that could go down low and do a post move, but could also pull up from the outside. And, it's not to say Dedrick Lawson can't. I know he's hit some, but I just think that it's probably something that you would want Dean Wade to do more of, and that's kind of the way that the NBA is trending.
Yes.
Those mid-range shots, three-point shots. So I think Dean Wade's probably got the better pro potential if healthy, but there's the key word, if healthy, and I would probably wager to bet that Dedrick Lawson is more healthy. Yeah. And he's probably going to have stronger combine workouts, and he'll probably get picked, and Dean Wade will either be a very late pick or won't get picked.
Yeah, Lawson certainly has the better back-to-the-basket moves, but in the NBA, you don't see that as much, and that's one of the big reasons why I thought if Dean Wade's healthy, because to me, he's a perfect stretch four. He's a perfect stretch four, and some people could say Dedrick Lawson maybe is too if he can develop that outside shot, which he improved throughout the season. But I just think Dean, with his athleticism, 100% healthy, and in the NBA, he doesn't have to be an alpha dog. He could just be a role player. I mean, I look at Darrell Arthur. There's a guy that Dean Wade is bigger, stronger, taller, wider, wider. Is what I said, wider, people. Wider than Darrell Arthur. Darrell Arthur has made over $40 million in the NBA, and all he does is stand out and shoot threes, and that's not what he did at Kansas. Kansas, he was a back-to-the-bucket player during that 08 championship run, and he really hasn't realized all his potential, but I think he's okay with it. Some of these guys get the NBA, they're happy to cash that check and say, hey, I'm okay being the third guy off the bench or the 11th guy, and then a couple guys get hurt. I don't have to start. I don't have to have an alpha dog mentality. And you can make a lot of money doing that, whether it be in NBA or overseas. So I just think if Dean can get healthy, he's going to make quite a bit of money. It just, now, whether it's in NBA or overseas, that I don't know.
All it takes is one team, you know.
That's right.
One team needing a big guy that maybe they want to roll the dice on, and they think they can heal his feet. I mean, it's not out of the question to think that he could get drafted and have a good NBA career. I just, I'm just kind of going on my gut based on what I know as of today, and that's just kind of where I sit on Dean.
Yeah, and I'm with you, because if he can't get the foot thing figured out, we've seen lots of big men in the history of basketball that, well, just look at Bill Walton. It short-circuited his career, and he had a great career when he played. But big guys with foot injuries, that's not usually a recipe for success. All right, next year's team. I've been asked this already. What about next year's K-State team? You know, you're going to have Jada back, maybe Sneed. There's talk that he may maybe leave. You got Mayween. How do you look at things for next year with K-State?
Yeah, well, let's just get the Xavier Sneed thing out there right now. I'm 98% certain he'll put his name in the NBA draft and then withdraw it and come back like Barry Brown did this year. I've given my opinions on that. I don't agree with that if you're somebody like Xavier Sneed, who's most certainly not going to get drafted. But everybody says there's nothing to lose for it, so whatever. You know, I'm not going to fight Bruce Weber on that, even though I have a differing opinion of it. But he'll put his name in, he'll work out, and then he'll come back to K-State. So you've got Sneed, you've got McCall Mawine back there as two senior players, and then, of course, Austin Trice will technically be a senior. I think that those are two guys, Mayween and Sneed, that are really going to have to step up. You know, McCall Mawine, put simply, is going to have to be consistent. He's never been consistent in his life. He scored 20-some points, had 11 rebounds, and then he's, regressed and had a total of 8 points over three games or something like that. He's going to have to be a night-in, night-out guy. Xavier Sneed's going to have to step up and be the scorer, but also not force shots. You know, he's going to have to let him come to him. And then Cartier Jada looks to be the guy that's going to take over and kind of lead right now. So those are three guys that you really look at right now and you kind of put a lot of stock in, because there's no reason that they shouldn't be able to step up to the challenge next year and provide something big for this team. I think they're going to be really young in terms of the starting lineup. I think they're going to start Dejuan Gordon, the shooting guard from Chicago that they signed this year. I think he'll start as a freshman. I think he has that talent. And they could potentially even start Montavious Murphy, a big man out of Texas, out of the Houston area, who could slide in at that four spot and allow McCall Mawine to stay at the five. A lot of it kind of depends on who they're going to start. It's not going to be a team that's going to contend for a Big 12 championship. I mean, go ahead and get that out of your mind right now. But it's a team that I believe should be in the NCAA tournament. I mean, look, first off, there's 68 spots in the NCAA tournament. And it seemed like Oklahoma made it this year simply because they scheduled tough in the non-con. All you got to do is challenge yourself in a non-conference schedule, and you've already got one foot in the door. So there's no reason they shouldn't be in the NCAA tournament. Probably be a lower seed and probably have quite a battle on their hands, probably another first round or first weekend exit unless something crazy happened. But it's not going to be awful if you can get everybody to step up, if you can get everybody to continue to develop. And, it's a lot easier said than done. I mean, I would like to think McCall Mawine could play at a consistent level, but I would have liked to have thought he could play like that this year, with a full year and a full summer under his belt. I would like to believe that Cartier Jada is going to be healthy, but he's had a knee injury and a hand injury now. You just never know what else he might go under. And Xavier Sneed is going to have to step up a ton in terms of his entire approach to the game. I mean, he's no longer the third or fourth option that you kind of have to remember because he might go off. He's the man now. So it's an interesting team. It's an interesting layout. Like I said, it's not going to be one that's going to win a Big 12 championship or anything like that, but I will contend that they should be in the NCAA tournament. I mean, that's what my expectation is for K-State basketball, is you should always have a team that's decent enough to get into a field of 68 teams. And if you can't do that, then I'd be pretty disappointed.
I agree with you. I think the wild card to me, and I wouldn't know until they get going, and is their depth. You know, if there was an injury to Jada or to Snead, could they overcome that next year? And I don't know enough about the youth and what's coming in. You know more than I do on that. And that's always a wild card. But, you know, we've seen K-State be able to overcome that for the most part here the last couple of seasons. Now, it was a tough day for K-State because the men lost and the women were playing at the same time, and they were blown out by Michigan. But still, for the women to get a 9 seed where they were earlier this year, a fairly young team, although they lose Kayla Goth, and she's going to be hard to replace. But just your quick thoughts on the K-State women and what they have for next year.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be – they're going to have to develop a lot of youth. Obviously, Christy Carr, it sounds rough. I probably would define her season as pretty disappointing in terms of the fact that she was a top 20 recruit and was pretty inconsistent as a freshman. But, you know, if she can step up, if you can get Peyton Williams to play at that same level, that same she was just phenomenal this year. So if you can get her playing at that level, you get Christy Carr to step up and maybe, you know, a consistent Rachel Ranke. Someone's going to have to take over at that point guard spot, like you said, where Kayla Goff was, and that's not going to be easy by any means. It's going to be quite a task to fill, but I do think that they have a really good team in terms of what they've experienced. I mean, they've added pieces. Deshaun Beard was probably the best find that Jeff Minnie's had in terms of a late addition, probably in his career, I would wager to say. She was phenomenal this year. And then they've got some new faces as well. So it'll probably be tough at the start to find a replacement for Kayla. But I think that it's a team that's a program that's on the right trajectory right now and probably would expect them back in the postseason as well.
All right, prom's around the corner, and not too long ago, you were probably attending proms. For me, it was, well, it's been a while. So, the off-the-wall question, two-parter. Best thing about prom, worst thing about prom?
Oh, man. Well, the worst thing's the pictures, without a doubt. I mean, like, that's the easy one. It's like, what time is prom? 7? All right, well, it's 2 o'clock, and I'm already late.
Yeah.
It's the worst. That's the worst part, without a doubt. The best part... Oh, man. I don't know. I would probably say the best part is, like, is if you're into, like, driving something crazy or, like, doing something different is like, finding a car, you know?
Yeah.
I can't say that I really ever did anything like that. I never had anything crazy in terms of vehicles, but I did know people that kind of went all out, and that was always cool. The craziest thing I ever did was wear a white tux, so... Mm. You know, that was about all the crazier I ever got it from. But I would say that's probably kind of like the two best parts is, like, I don't know, picking what kind of cool tux you get to wear was pretty fun.
Nothing about dancing. I thought there could be something there about dancing, but no, nothing on dancing.
I'm not. I'll say this. I've been more of a dancer when I got to college for reasons I won't name on the air.
Trust me, I know there's reasons. Yes, I've been there before. I know what you're talking about, Riley. Yes, I was the same way. It's like, man, I'm doing these dances at these establishments. I didn't do that when I was younger. Why is that?
Exactly. I wonder why.
All right, now that you're catching a break in your schedule a little bit, although I know you would have liked to have covered both teams here this week in the NCAA tournament, what are you working on at Go Power Cat?
Yeah, pretty nice to breathe for a second. although I would have liked to have been driving out to Louisville today. That would have been fun. But, yeah, we got spring football is started. Coach Kleiman actually opened practice up yesterday, which I was sad because I was flying back. Travel difficulties, so I couldn't make it to practice, but we'll have tons of spring football stuff and still peppering in some basketball stuff here and there, and then you know, recruiting kind of kick up a little bit more. It's a bit of a slower time, but it's also not, because we, you know, still got to keep pumping out stuff, still got to keep doing stuff, and it'll all be there.
All right, well, we'll talk more football next week with you, and we appreciate the time as always. Enjoy a little bit of a slower week, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday, Riley.
All right, thanks, Wade.
That's Riley Gates of Go Power Cat. Does a wonderful job. Check him out. And he is our Wildcat Insider, brought to you by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit and Heineken Electric Residential and Commercial Electric Service Company.